B-Pod Studios.
The following podcast is PG, may contain sketchy advice, embarrassing anecdotes, and may not be suitable for parents who think they have their shit together. This is PG with Roxanne Wilder and Mark Jason.
If you haven't checked the calendar, International Women's Day is coming up. It's March 8th. Circle it and celebrate women in your life. And we want to talk to Sarah Combs today. She's an amazing woman. She is CEO at University Area CDC, and she has three children, two of whom are twin boys, so she has her hands full, and she is getting it done. Sarah, so good talking with you today. What's going on?
Well, I tell you, every morning is a challenge, it seems like, and this morning was no different than that when I was trying to get the boys off and ready for school. And I tell you, I walked into preschool this morning and had gel running down the back of my leg, which I didn't know. My hair had broke its rubber band, and I just looked a little bit like a mess. And so that's how I'm starting off my morning.
So I have to ask you, so you have two boys, right? Is that correct?
I do. I have identical twin boys who are four.
Oh, wow. And then you're also, we'll get into your career as well, but you're a working mama, a very successful woman as far as CEO of University Area CDC. So you've got so much going on. So we want to hear how you balance everything. But I have to get back to the twin boys part. Every parent who is not the parent of a twin or triplet, et cetera, I think we all say this, oh my gosh, can you imagine if this child had been had been part of a set of twins? How would we do it? How did you do it out the gate with two boys at that? Because boys at the age they're at, they've been so active too. So what were some of the things that started to happen when you first gave birth and had your twins? You're like, oh my gosh, this is intense.
Well, I have to tell you that when I found out, I cried a lot. And just thought, oh my goodness, you know, I have a 6-year-old little girl as well, a daughter. And so, you know, when I found out she was almost two at the time, and I thought, how in the world am I going to juggle, being a CEO of an organization and, you know, managing that, and then bringing two little lives into the world, you know, having three children under the age of two, how am I going to do that? And so after I got done crying and pulled it together, I kind of created a plan and just said, okay, you know, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to figure this out. And, you know, fast forward to where we are now. And I'm just so happy and thankful that I was blessed with these two little rascals. And they challenged me in ways I never thought I'd be challenged. And, it's been such a fun journey, and I learn something new every single day. That's for sure.
I'm sure. Okay, logistically, how did you pull it off at the beginning? So you've got your 2-year-old. She was two when they were born, or almost two, you said?
She was. She just turned two.
And what's her name?
Her name is Alyssa.
Okay, so you've got baby Alyssa turning two, and then the two new twins, twin boys. And how did she welcome them into the house? Did she become mama's little helper? I mean, that's still pretty young to be mama's helper.
Yeah, no, absolutely. She was like, okay, they're ready to go back now. You know, I need the attention on me. It's kind of a typical little girl.
Right.
And, you know, to make things even more a little complicated, they're identical. So you cannot tell them apart. And a funny story is, you know, we brought them home from the hospital and we said, how are we going to tell these guys apart? And I said, you know what? I'm going to paint one of their toenails blue. That way I know that, you know, their names are Aiden and Trey. That way I know if I paint Aiden's toe blue, then we'll know that's Aiden. And so, of course, you know, that blue polish wore off. And my mom was with me, of course, thank God for family. I don't know what we'd do if we didn't have good family and friends to help us when we're, you know, needing it most. Mm-hmm. But she was supposed to paint Aiden's toe blue. So we knew who was who. And I went in the room, I came back and I said, Mom, you painted Trey's toe blue. So, I mean, we almost had them mixed up from the very beginning. I mean, it was just he had a little scratch on his face. That's how I knew he was Trey. But we almost got him, you know, mixed up from the very beginning. But Alyssa, you know, she was a helper for the first couple days, and then she was over it. You know, she wanted the attention of mommy and daddy back on her, which was, you know, kind of typical.
Of course. Of course. How did you balance that and help her feel like, okay, don't worry, honey, you're not the only child anymore, but you're still mom and daddy's baby girl.
Well, I think it's important to be able to you know, when one parent is dealing with, you know, the twins, the other parent, you know, can take her to the park or, you know, do something that's special and then give her special tasks. You know, at two, you can't do a whole lot, but you can go fetch diapers and, you know, you can help with the bottle and you can help feed. So giving her little chores and little tasks that she feels that she can contribute, even though she's only two, I thought was really, really important, because then she felt, you know, a little bit more connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could see that as they, you know, started to get bigger and grow a little bit and were a little bit more relatable, you know, when they're babies, it's just hard because they don't do much but sleep and cry and whatnot. But as they got a little bit bigger, she got to be a little bit more connected with them, which was good.
Good. I have to admit, I am sort of twin obsessed. And you probably meet people like that all the time when people
all
see
the time.
Right? They see them twins, they start asking a million questions. And
well, you know, people always ask them, you know, are they twins? And they look identical, like identical. And so sometimes I'm just so ornery. Sometimes I say, no, they're not. And they just get this puzzled look on their face, like, well, what?
They were, Sarah, you're so mean. No, I'm just kidding.
I said, no, yeah. They're twins. They're twins.
they're revving up for all their stalkerish twin questions and you shut them down. No, they just look a lot alike,
yeah.
And they're the same size, and I dress them the same for fun. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do they have those sorts of twin similarities in personality? What do you see about their personalities that are... How does that work?
They could be more different. Yeah. I mean,
that's
just so amazing.
Okay.
I mean, they're identical twins. So, I mean, they have the exact same DNA. And I tell you, it's just remarkable to see their little souls, how they couldn't be any more different, you know? And
mm-hmm.
So it's just pretty amazing just to say that, you know, everyone has their own individual soul and, you know, they couldn't be more different, which is so great for me. And I was one of those moms, those twin moms that I was like, I am not dressing them alike. I want them to have their own individuality, you know, because they look so much alike,
right.
That I, you know, tried to stay away from dressing them alike. And it was helpful because then we could tell them apart. And I always dressed Aiden in blue and Trey in red.
Mm-hmm.
And that was helpful for, you know, people who didn't, you know, weren't around them so much to know who they were, because it's hard. I mean, sometimes it's hard for me, especially when I see the back of their heads. I have to say, hey, who are you? You know, and they think that's funny.
So when I'm thinking about the twins and personality development, and you said something so fascinating, and I figured it out too as a mom, that, you know, personality has long been described as it's a combination of nature and nurture, but there is that third element that is spirit. And if you dropped that baby elsewhere with a different nurturing environment, they would still have that stroke of their particular spirit shining through. And
mm-hmm.
So I see that with my daughter, because some things you say, all right, well, maybe she's a little bit like mama in this regard, and she inherited that from me, or maybe she's learned it from me, she's observed me, she's mimicking me. But then there are these whole other facets of her personality that Doug and I look at her and go, well, where'd you learn to do that? How come you act like that? That in ways in which, you know, we have ways that we're bold, but she's so bold and unafraid and comfortable in her own skin. And I'm like, how does she learn to be like this? So that's interesting that you say two boys, exact same DNA, but totally different personalities.
Yeah. And that's what I think is just so amazing about just life in general, you know, just
mm-hmm.
being able to witness that. And, you know, I think that one of the greatest gifts is having children for myself and my husband, Will, is, you know, nothing marks time like children, you
mm-hmm.
know. We tried for probably about, gosh, 5 years to have a child, and it just nothing would work. And so, you know, it taught us to be patient. But when we, you know, those 5 years just didn't seem like 5 years. But when we had, you know, when we finally were able to be pregnant and have a child, you know, seeing a child go from, you know, being born to 5 years, it's just remarkable to see their growth and development, and just such a blessing. I mean, just such a miracle, to be honest. It's just so amazing, and it'll stay probably, or it will absolutely be, you know, the best thing that I'll ever be able to witness is, you know, having a child and watching them
mm-hmm,
grow.
Mm-hmm. I know that development is just remarkable. And so my daughter's to this stage now, she'll be two in April. And so last night she's lying in bed and she's going, hi, Detta, how are you? Hi, Mama,
yeah.
How are you? And so she's practicing her conversational skills, and you're like, how did this even happen, that her brain is just, I mean, it's amazing the development they make in those first years. And so that kind of brings me to one of the topics I wanted to catch up with you about, and that is technology. because we have a lot of benefits from technology. But the more studies I'm reading lately, the more I'm getting into, it's really bad to expose particularly younger children under 2, particularly children under 5, to a lot of screen time. And then other people will tell you, hey, this is great because it's an opportunity to have screens around and use those in an educational fashion. And then other people, which I was guilty of it the other night, I was at a Mexican restaurant and she was being a terror and I pulled out my phone and I had no other option. And I said, I never want to be like that, but I just had, I was either give her the phone and try to wrap up dinner in a pretty short amount of time or make everybody else in the restaurant miserable, which I would never, that's poor manners. In and of itself, you know, so you're torn. So anyways, kind of a broad question, but how does technology help in your family, in your household, and how does it create challenges for you that you have to work through?
It's so funny when, you know, before you have children, you always would look at people who had children and think, you know, cast judgment, which is so terrible to say, but it's so true. You'd say, oh, I would never do that. Or, you know, and you have no idea until you have your own children, you know, and I look back and I just said, shame on myself for judging people because you have no idea until you've walked in those shoes to understand what it's like. And I think technology is a blessing and a curse, you know, and I think with everything, it's important to be able to put moderation on that. And so for us, I mean, it's just so easy and convenient to be able to, you know, give them an iPad and let them do that because they're out of your hair. But, you know, it's really not beneficial for them, you know, to do that. And so what we found is it's a reward, you know, to be able to use their iPad as a reward. And we save that reward for the weekend. So that's kind of how we do it during the week is, you know, because they want it. And what's so crazy is how addictive they'll be with it. You know,
I mean,
if we let them, they would use their iPads every single day as long as they could. I mean, it is just amazing. And I tell you, I don't know, they download things. I mean, my 4-year-old boys, they're showing me stuff that I didn't even know my iPad did. I mean, it's just incredible. They're going in, downloading new games and deleting old apps. And I mean, it's just incredible to see how their little brains work. But I think moderation is key and being able to set those limits and almost use it as a reward system. So, you know, if you're good and you've listened and you've did all these things, these benchmarks, then you're able to get it as a reward. And I think the same for TV too. We really try to make sure that, you know, we don't just plop them down in front of the TV and, you know, allow that to just to be their source of entertainment. You know, a lot of outdoor activities, important crafts, drawing, you know, all those other stimulants that are so important for, you know, educational growth and development. But like anyone, sometimes it's difficult and sometimes you have a hard day, you know, and sometimes it's like today's going to be an iPad day. And you know what? Everyone's sick in the house. And it's just going to be one of those days. And it's okay, I think, you know, to have those days. But I think balance is key.
And I think you made a good point. They don't have those internal governors on them to know, okay, I think I've spent enough time staring at my phone and so or staring at the tablet. So you have to do that as a parent, kind of reel them back in. And I have seen my daughter's face, Evelyn Jade's face gets kind of, I don't know, the same way if she knows she's about to get a piece of candy, which we don't really give her a ton of sugar. But if she knows she's going to get a treat like candy or she knows she's going to be able to look at a screen, she gets this, I don't know how to describe her facial expression, but she's super excited and different than, you know, if we say, hey, we're going to do Play-Doh. If we say we're going to do Play-Doh, she's like, yay. But I mean, she gets a manic look if you tell her she's about to get a piece of candy or she's about to get on a screen. So there's something there. There's something in the design that makes it incredibly alluring to children and adults as well.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and also, you know, mimicking behavior. I mean, my husband and I were talking about it, you know, you know, just this week he was sitting on the couch while, you know, we were all there playing on the floor and he was reading though, you know, he's reading on his phone. But I said, you know, they don't know you're reading a book on your phone. You know, we have to set the example as well, because what they see us do, then they want to do it as well. So, I mean, I think modeling our own behavior is important too. And we just talked about that this weekend, is that they see us doing it. We're saying you can't have it. You know, that's not really setting a good example. So we've kind of put ourselves in check a little bit too.
Oh my gosh, I relate to that because I'll notice, and I try to keep the phone kind of away from our playtime. So when she wakes up from her afternoon nap, I try to keep it away, my best. But sometimes you have to deal with a work issue or family situation, and I find myself looking at my phone, and I do zone out. And you realize she's trying to get your attention, and you're like, wait a second, I'm having a conversation with this person in my text messaging, and you sort of ignore them, and then you say, I don't want her to see me do that. I didn't grow up like that. My mom may have been having another conversation on the telephone, or I guess it's all relative, but, you know, to another friend, but you're still observing that communication versus my mom staring at a screen and she's not paying attention to me. So modeling behavior is very important. You are correct. Mm-hmm. And along those lines, people kind of, I don't know if they get annoyed with me or, you know, in the day of text messaging, there's an expectation that you send a text and someone's going to get back to you. And I'm guilty of it. I'll send someone a text and I'll, oh, did they hit me back yet? Okay, what did they say? I can't always do that because I have my blocks of time where I just try to be proactive. It could be a block of time where I'm working, or it could be a block of time where I'm spending time with my daughter, and I am not available electronically. I'm not available on my phone. And so I know that sometimes people, whether it's your friends or your coworkers, you have to have that boundary set with your coworkers that's acceptable to still keep your job, of course. But you know, I set those boundaries, and I think sometimes people don't understand, especially if they don't have kids, or they just, not that they mind, but, you know, I think you run into some issues there sometimes, but you have to set boundaries in all areas of your life in order to have peace of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so, you know, critical, just, you know, speaking from, you know, the work side piece of it, that, you know, here at the University Area CDC, we really, really tie in having a healthy work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
That's so critically important, you know, and I tell my staff that when you are, you know, when you are off work, when you are done working, you need to be home with your family, you know, recharging yourself and spending that quality time. Because if you don't do that, I'm not going to get the best employee possible, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just making sure that, you know, we have that company culture here, and that it's not just something that we say, but it's something that's ingrained in us. And so, you know, we talk that way and we preach that way, and that's what I do. And so if it's the weekend, I'm done with work. I mean, unless there's, you know, a big grant that I have to work on for some reason, but most times I am done with work. It is time for my family. It is time for me to spend time with them and to recharge and to focus on them. And everything else can wait, you know. And I think that's really important to be able to, you know, set the boundaries on how people can utilize your time and what those expectations are. Because if you are constantly, you know, answering every single email that comes in, you know, people get used to that. And they think that they want that immediate response and that you need to be on the clock, you know, 24/7. And so I think that it's really showing people how to use your time and what that response will be like and sticking to it. You know, I think that's important as well. And then, you know, I just think that employers these days are realizing how important it is, you know, for families to be able to have that work-life balance, because they'll get such a more productive employee out of it at the end. So I think that's key.
So you have two strong components going for you at work, especially in your environment that you've created. And first thing is you make it so that balance is important. Also, your mission, what you're accomplishing at work at University Area CDC, it's strengthening communities. It's a focus on education and families being involved in children's development. So you're kind of the principles that you're pushing in your workplace, they're going to carry over to your home life too, and vice versa. But also, Sarah, obviously you're in a leadership position. And so that means a lot of responsibilities come with that. And so there are a couple different attitudes I want to address that you hear about in the workplace, especially when you think about women with families or women in general. We've heard of the whole lean in concept, where you do more, put more of yourself out there, dedicate more time. And then we've also heard things like, you may have even told me this, that it's hard for women to do, or anyone for that matter, to do more than three things really well. So if you're trying to take care of your family, take care of your job, and work out, for instance, that's about all you can handle. And so I throw both of those concepts out there to you. What's your overall feeling about whether or not women can have it all?
I think that that's something that, you know, as I kind of go out in the professional world and speak on different panels and whatnot, that question gets brought up almost all the time. And I think that, you know, every person is different. I think that's first and foremost the most important part. And not everyone's wired the same way. So, you know, what's productive for me might not be productive for someone else. But I think that it is possible to be able to be a, you know, working professional and to be a good mom and to be a good wife, you know, and to do those things. And I think the key is balance. You know, I think whether it's leaning in or leaning out, or, you know, being, you know, delegating different, you know, aspects of it, I think that it's possible. You just have to figure out that balance that works for you. And so I think that the thing that I've learned over the last couple years specifically is surrounding yourself with people who are, you know, positive and are going to be helpful for you to be able to reach that goal, or, you know, to be able to reach that that lifestyle that you're trying to achieve. And so at, you know, at work here at the UACDC, you know, we often talk to our staff about how important it is to be able to, you know, share those responsibilities and work in a team environment and not feel like you have to, you know, do it all, be able to break down those silos and have different departments working together as one, so it doesn't feel like it's just you, you know, with all of this work to do. And I think that's important, and asking for help is so critical as well. You know, we can only do what we can do, and that's for sure. And, you know, some days, you know, the laundry is not going to get done and the dishes aren't going to get put up. But you know what? It's more important for me after I come home from, you know, a hard day's work mm-hmm. to sit down on the floor and play with my children. And you know what? That's just what's going to happen that day. And so I think it's important for us to give ourselves some grace and to be okay with not having the dishes done, or, you know, to be okay with saying, you know what, I'm going to go get my hair done today because that's what's going to make mommy feel better. I've got my hair done or my nails, and not having that guilt as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of women do, is they feel guilty because, you know, they're, you know, taking care of themselves in a way that maybe someone would find, you know, that's not the best use of your time or whatnot. And I think we need to get over that and be more supportive of one each other.
That's what I was, right. That's what I was just going to say is it's one thing, you know, don't be critical of yourself and start by not being critical of others, how other moms spend their time and choices women make in general. You know, some people, you feel like someone goes, oh my gosh, how do they do that? They stay home with those three kids all day. They must be going crazy. Or, oh, she must not have any time for her kids because look at what she's doing at her job. Or she's not doing a good job because she's trying to spend more time with her kids. You know, I mean, there's so many scenarios. And I think we all know as women, we're making the best choice for us personally and trying to take care of those around us as well, whether it's in the work environment or at home.
I think that's so important. I think that's so important. And you know, the more and more that I meet women who are even if they're just staying home, I mean, I hate to say even if, because that's kind of what society has placed on mothers who stay home. I mean, their job's tougher than mine. Mm-hmm. And I say that every single day. If you're a stay-at-home mom, you have the toughest job in the world. And I will hands down mm-hmm. put that up against any job, because it is tough to be able to stay home and do the work that you do on a regular basis. So, you know, sometimes I feel like, ooh, I get to go to work because it's not as hard as being at home. And so I think that we just need to, you know, as women, embrace each other and be more supportive and give each other a little slack, you know, when it comes to those things, and not be so judgmental, because, you know, it's just so incredibly important to have that support and not cast judgment, you know, because we don't walk in each other's shoes. We don't know what it's really like. And it's just so nice when someone can, you know, give you a smile or give you a pass when you're having a hard day. And mm-hmm. I'd like to see more of that.
Oh, yes. When you're having a hot mess mom day, which I have so many of those, I can't even tell you. And so I do think, too, moms who stay home, it is so difficult. And the reason I know this is because I know Doug gives me a lot more support with our daughter because I'm a working mom than he probably would if I was a stay-at-home mom. Not because he wouldn't want to help out, but you would have to shift some of the responsibilities more towards me. So I know dads absolutely step it up when the mom goes to work, too. So that's good.
Absolutely. And it's a, you know, it's not easy. And so having that, you know, two parent relationship is so incredibly important, you know, having not just the mom stepping in, but the dad too, you know, and not all moms, we have a lot of single moms out there and they're doing it solo. They're doing it all on their own. And I just can't even imagine, you know, having, you know, to do that on your own. So I'm so incredibly thankful. I see single moms in this community that where I work every mm-hmm. single day. And I'm just in awe, you know, of I how know. They're able to do it. You know, I just really am. And I just think that, you know, we as a society need to be a little bit more forgiving for, you know, mm-hmm. some of those things, because it's a tough job. It is a tough job, but it is the most important job that we have. And so I just, you know, thank those moms out there who are really making an effort to raise their kids and who are making that choice to stay home. Not everyone can. But the moms who are, I have so much profound respect for them.
No doubt. Oh, my goodness, for sure. Okay, Sarah, one more thing before we wrap things up. I just want to get your take on organization. What is your number one tip with three kids, busy schedules for those kids, and it's just going to get more so as they get older and have their different activities. But what is one organizational tip? And it can be something logistical. It can be how you maintain your schedule. It can be something that you do around the house for storage space. I mean, or for organizing your belongings. But what's something from an organizational standpoint you couldn't survive without?
Well, I've implemented a calendar, which has been great at my house. And so on that calendar, you will find the kids' sports activities. You will find who's cooking dinner, because that was a big one. We found that, you know, when my husband and I both got home from work, it was like, oh, we were exhausted. Who's going to cook? Well, did you put anything out? No, I didn't. Oh, great. Now fast food. You know, and we try not to do that. And so this calendar has been wonderful because it says who's going to cook and what they're going to cook on what night, who, you know, what sports the kids have or after activities, and who's going to pick them up. And then any notes, or dates, birthday parties or, you know, functions that we have, or if I have to work late and I have to attend a town hall meeting or something, it's on the calendar. So we just started implementing that. Don't ask me why we've waited so long, but I tell you that has, probably saved my marriage. I mean, it's been wonderful.
I know. And because, you know, as much as Doug does for our daughter, I have to give him so much credit all the time. There, I realize that he doesn't have the brain like we do as women for all those details of where they need to be, when. And so, you know, who's coming to watch her, who's coming to pick her up, who's doing this, who's doing that. And so we'll have a discussion about it. And I'll think I've communicated it clearly, like, okay, she's going to eat this. This is going to happen. Da, da, da. And then he'll text me, who's coming here today? At what time? So I realize we just have... The pressure is on us to maintain all those details. So find out whatever system works for you. If you're communicating it in a calendar that you put up on the wall, that's probably the best way to do it. Because then it's like, okay, go look at the calendar. It's up there.
Yes. And I'm so happy to hear that you said that, because I feel the same way.
You're not
Our
alone, Sarah.
Our brains are just different.
I know.
Our brains are just different.
And in my head, sometimes I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? I just told you yesterday. Da, 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 da. And it's because, you know, maybe he's got more important things to think about.
Or he's just not thinking about it at all.
Yes, that might be it too. Well, Sarah, it's so much fun catching up with you. Will you do this again sometime?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to.
Okay. So happy for all the success you're having and your beautiful family.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Another PG podcast, Parental Guidance Needed in the Books.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.